Good evening, everybody. It's good to be with you on this beautiful Lord's Day evening. Please turn in your Bibles to John chapter 11, please. John chapter 11. Be studying from there. I think I can speak on behalf of Brian as well, since I know Brian. We're disappointed about the circumstances that Ron Mosby couldn't be with us, but we're always happy to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I hope that you get something powerful out of the sermon that you can take and apply to your life. On short notice, Mitch just told me to dust off an old lesson. I told him that I could do that. The problem with dusting off an old lesson is that if you haven't given it recently, you go back and you find out how bad it was. This morning's was really good. So if that was old, then I've got a lot to live up to. Yeah, you dust it off and you realize, you know, you've grown, hopefully, over the years that you've been separated from this lesson, and you've grown as a preacher, hopefully. So once I dusted it off, I just put it in the trash. But I've got the main points down, and that's what matters. So if our lesson is 15 minutes tonight, you know why. If you don't like these 15 minutes or so, then the other parts, they were real bad. A guy was asked to do a funeral one time, and he had never done a funeral. He wasn't a preacher of any kind. And so he decided that he was going to read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to decide and to see what Jesus did when he did funerals. And what he saw was Jesus never did any funerals. He did resurrections. And that's what John chapter 11 is about. He raises a man named Lazarus who's been in the grave now for 4 days. One of the things that's important to realize about this story is that it's a transitional point in the life of Christ. There was some spur-of-the-moment attacks on the life of Christ, but after this event, the raising of Lazarus, the evidence was so overwhelming that the leaders of the Jews decide, we need to stop this man, and we need to stop him by killing him. If you begin reading with me in verse 45, it says, many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him, but some of them went to the Pharisees and became tattletales. They told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And what a travesty that would be. I say tongue in cheek. But to them, that would be a travesty. They lose their position, and they're also concerned about their position with Rome. The end of verse 48 says, the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. So one of the most astounding things in human history, no exaggeration, has happened. A man who's been dead 4 days has come back to life. The evidence is overwhelming. Did you know that the Pharisees and the council, they never deny what these witnesses say? Evidently, they were so credible that when they say this, that Jesus has raised this man, the Pharisees never question it. The council never questions it. And neither did they deny the other signs that were previous to this. This man, they say, performs many signs. And if he keeps on keeping on, everyone will believe in him. The Romans will come away and take away our place in our nation. So one of the most astounding things has happened, and these guys are worried about politics. So they make a decision. Caiaphas makes a prophecy, and he has no idea what he's saying. He speaks better than he realizes. But it's verse 53 I want you to hone in on, so that from that day on, they made plans to put him to death. They made no further investigation about whether Jesus had actually done what these witnesses said that he did. The evidence was overwhelming. But what's important about this story is that the evidence backs up one of the most powerful claims that's involved in this story. And it's the claim, not necessarily the miracle, that I want to hone in on. The claim is in verse 25 and 26. When Jesus is speaking to Martha, verse 25, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? So Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. And you can go to several different commentaries and find out what commentators say that means. But I think Jesus actually gave his own commentary, right? Immediately after that claim, I am the resurrection and the life. And let me tell you what that means. Everyone who believes in me, though he die physically, he's going to live. And if you believe in me and are alive, you'll never die. And Martha, John, Vera, Alan, do you believe this? Do we believe what Jesus just said? Well, at the end of the lesson, you might find out that you believe half of it. But let's go back to the beginning of the story. Lazarus gets ill in verse 1. We don't know what kind of sickness he comes down with. But Mary and Martha, who were his siblings, his sisters, they send out a 911 call to Jesus. And Jesus gets the 911 call, and he doesn't act in a way that EMTs are supposed to respond. Normally, you expect them to get on it and go to the side of the person that's hurting. But Jesus, in fact, stays where he is for two more days. Verse 3 says, "So the sisters sent to him, saying, 'Lord, he whom you love is ill.' But when Jesus heard it, he said, 'This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it.'" Verse 5 says, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus." When we read the message, "He whom you love is ill," and when you read verse 5, that he loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, we might say, well, didn't Jesus love everybody? He did, but he's got a special relationship with this family. They're a special friend to him, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And I think that's what John is saying. There's all the reason in the world for Jesus to get up and go to Lazarus' side immediately, but that's not what he does. Verse 6 says, "So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was." He remains where he is 48 hours before going to Lazarus' side. And you start to get the sense that this is one of the very few miracles in the Gospels where Jesus is staging the events. And by staging, I don't mean faking or becoming a fraud. But by staging, I mean he's waiting for something to happen. He's waiting for Lazarus to die. Verse 8 or verse 7 says, "Then after he said to his disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again,'" after the 2 days, that is, "the disciples said to him, 'Rabbi, the Jews were just seeking to stone you. Are you going to go there again? You can't go to that area. They're seeking to kill you.'" Well, yeah, that's what Jesus wants to happen. But look at what he says to the disciples. He gives a little proverb here about walking at night, and people who walk at night stumble, and if you walk in the day, you don't stumble. Read verse 9. "Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him.'" This little proverb here is for the disciples. You guys are walking in the fog, and there's something that's about to happen that you disciples need to see. I know that he's referring to the disciples, because look at what he says there in verse 14 and 15. "Then Jesus told them plainly, 'Lazarus has died, and for your sake," for whose sake? "For the disciples' sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to them. There is something that the disciples, people who already believe, need to see about this Lazarus event. And all I want you to see about that is this. The disciples already believed in Jesus, by the way. They've already confessed up to this point that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. But they need to see something else. And as disciples of Christ, those of you in the audience who are, isn't this true of us all? That we need something else to learn? Oftentimes that we need more faith, that there's an aspect about our faith that we need to increase. "I'm glad," Jesus says, "for your disciples' sake," you guys, "that I wasn't there, so that you may believe." And yet they had already believed in Jesus. There's always more to learn. There's always more to do. There's always an aspect of our faith and doctrine that we need to see. So he goes to them. Verse 17 says, "Now when Jesus came, he found Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother." Verse 20. "So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" I don't know what tone this is set in, I wonder sometimes if Martha's being a little critical, because she could be a little critical. You remember the Luke 10 event, how she was angry that Mary wasn't helping her out? Lord, if you had been here, I heard that you remained 2 days. I don't know if they know that or not. Or if they're just saying sincerely, Lord, if you had been here, this would not have happened. But in any case, I want to caution you, before we get into this discussion with Martha, Martha is going to say some things that sound like she has her spiritual ducks in a row, but she doesn't. She's going to say things that indicate some real trust, but she doesn't really truly understand the import of what she's saying. Because when Jesus is about to raise Lazarus, and Jesus says, take away the stone, do you know who tells them, no, don't do that. He stinks. He's a deteriorating corpse. It's Martha. Verse 21. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Verse 22. Even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. And it may sound like Martha believes that there's a resurrection coming, but she doesn't. Verse 23. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him in verse 24, I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection on the last day. She's thinking, yeah, I get it. Lazarus is going to become alive just like everybody else will on that last great day. Everybody will rise. All dead bodies will have life. And there'll be a resurrection of life and of judgment. We'll either go to heaven or hell. And Martha is saying, I believe that. I believe that he's going to rise in the future. But when Jesus gives his claim in verse 25, you'll notice that the tense is not future tense. And I want you to notice this. Jesus does not say, I will be the resurrection. There will be a resurrection on the last day. He says, I am the eternal present tense. I am the resurrection and the life. And whoever believes in me, though he die, yet he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me, he shall never die. Do you believe this, Martha? And she kind of dumbs it down in verse 27. She says to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you're the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Well, that's not what Christ asked. You ever been asked a question before and you give an answer that you think is right answer, but you didn't really answer the question that was asked? Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. And if you believe in me, you'll never, ever die. That's what the question was. Hang on to that tense. I am the resurrection. Well, Martha goes and gets Mary. Mary comes. She bows down before Jesus, and she says the same thing that Martha did. Lord, if you had been here, this wouldn't have happened. Then we're given, I think, one of the great evidences that Jesus was a human being, and that Jesus entered into the human condition when he came to the earth. 3 times. And you know that whenever the Bible starts repeating things, our ears need to go up, our light bulbs need to go on. 3 times, John will say that Jesus has this outpouring of emotion. Verse 33 is the first time. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. The second time is in verse 35, the verse that we've all got memorized. Jesus wept. And then in verse 38, then Jesus deeply moved again. So 3 times, the text says that he became emotional. Now, this might not be a huge point in regards to this sermon, but I think that this is one of the greatest evidences that he was not just God on earth, but he was God in human form. He experienced human feelings. Isn't this how we feel when we go to funerals? It's not that he's crying or that he's weeping for Lazarus. If you're wondering why Jesus is crying, I think verse 33 actually told us that when he saw Mary and he saw the other people consoling Mary, when they got emotional, he got emotional. You ever go to a funeral and you're totally, the funeral of a saint, that is, the funeral of a Christian, and you're as confident as you could be where they are, and you're totally composed, you're not crying, you're not upset, you're not a wreck over the person that died, but you're a wreck at the funeral because you see the family. Has that ever happened to you? I've been reminded of this since my mother and father-in-law are in town. When our Grandma Price passed away a few years ago, Grandpa Price handled it amazingly well, just incredibly well. But there was a few times where, you know, as the procession's going by the casket and Grandpa Price is standing there, there was a few times where somebody would say something in his ear, somebody close to them, and you could see him get emotional, the husband of the person who's passed away. And those are the times that I hurt, that I struggled. I don't mean to say that I'm being like Christ. You know what I mean to say? Christ is being like us. And I don't mean to say that arrogantly. I mean to say that this is just human emotion. When you see other people cry and you see other people who hurt inside, it makes you hurt. It's just one of the great evidences that he experienced the human condition. So he says, or he goes to the tomb, he has this outpouring of emotion in verse 33. Martha says, no, he stinks. Don't take away the stone. And there's kind of a rebuke, I think, in verse 40. Jesus said to her, didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have always heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around so that they may believe that you sent me. Verse 43, when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The man who had died came out. His hands and feet were bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to him, or them, unbind him and let him go. Aren't you always amazed at the reaction of Jesus when Lazarus comes out of the tomb? You'd think, being a close friend to Lazarus, that Jesus would say, hey, Lazarus, how you doing? Sorry I wasn't there. What was it like? Of course, he knew what it was like. And I just wonder if Jesus is almost disappointed. You know, if you know that somebody was faithful and gone and in the arms of God, raising them wouldn't necessarily be the most joyous thing. And there's just kind of this casual, unbind him, let him go. That's awesome. A man dead 4 days came alive. And even the enemies were so overwhelmed by the evidence that they could not deny what Jesus had done. But the evidence is not as important as that claim in verse 25 and 26. When Jesus said, I am, present tense, the resurrection and the life. You know, I think we're a lot like Martha. In that we want to push off the power of God on the last day. And we think that resurrection power is something that's reserved for last day events. Well, I want to tell you, like Jesus told them that day, there is resurrection power right now. Here and now. Go back to John chapter 5. And let's read a funeral passage. We often read this at funerals because it talks about the resurrection of dead bodies, physical dead bodies. But I think that the verses previous are some of the most misunderstood amongst the Lord's church. Now, the resurrection of physical bodies is mentioned in verse 28. He says, do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming when all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and come out, those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of judgment. There's no doubt that Jesus is talking about the resurrection of physical bodies in verse 28 and 29. He mentions that those who are in the grave, right? Who are in the tombs on that last day, they will raise. But what I think we misunderstand is the resurrection that he talks about in verse 25. Look at this. See this with your own eyes. If you have a Bible, pick it up. Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and is now here. Now stop. He says this resurrection here in verse 25, that this is right now. There's an hour coming and this is right now. That hour is now. Did he say that about the resurrection at the last day. He said an hour is coming in verse 28, but he didn't say that it was right now. And so what I think is happening is this, that in verse 25, he's talking about spiritual resurrection. And in verse 28, he's talking about the physical dead body resurrection at the last day. There's a resurrection, all right, that can happen right now. That hour is now, the eternal present. I am the resurrection. When the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, verse 25, and those who hear will live. Dead people need to hear that. People dead in sin and struggling with serious problems need to hear that if you hear the voice of Jesus Christ, you can live. There is resurrection power now. And don't push it off and think physical. Yeah, that's going to happen. But you can be alive and awakened from sin and spiritual death. I just happen to believe that if a man can be raised from the dead 4 days, that God can raise you out of depression. And I just happen to believe that if Jesus can raise the dead, He can put you back on your feet when the world's knocked you down. I just happen to believe that if Lazarus was raised, He could raise you out of an addiction. There's resurrection power right now. And if you go into that tomb, I don't mean that body of water. I just mean the watery grave, the watery tomb. You'll come out alive. And you can do that tonight. If you're subject to the gospel call, we bid you to come.